Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
This one, follow Louise Casey. Unbelievable, very moving. And it sort of reminds me, it's not the bit of the talk, but it reminds me, I've been a GP in the same area for 22 years. So I have seen those children grow up. I have intervened. I have personally taken children to school. I have personally given children my books, and I have personally supported mothers and families. But it's, as with you, becoming very different. And one of the themes of my talk is about, I suspect, and I hate this word because it's what the politicians use, but it is about getting back to basics, as we heard, and somehow throwing out those endless metrics and measurements and monitoring, and that's actually interfering with what we have to do, which is to stop this intergenerational nonsense of deprivation and poverty and trouble. So what an amazing woman. The last time I was in this room was earlier this year at the Lib Dem conference, seems like yesterday, in a damp and blowy Brighton day, and how things have changed. Like Louise, it's a great honour to be here in front of you. I'm a little bit anxious, though, because I'm always in awe of midwife skills. I've, ever since medical school, have been slightly frightened of you. And I don't know how anyone can stay so calm when everybody around you is screaming and heaving and huffing and puffing, and that's just the medics. But it's an absolute pleasure to be with you. As you hear, I'm the chair of the Royal College of GPs, and I'm actually the second female chair in half a century, so it hasn't taken us long in a profession that's particularly women. I represent 44,000 general practitioners, mainly in the UK, but a small overseas. We are not the trade union. We are the home of standards and quality of general practice. And this year, we're celebrating our 60th anniversary, which is wonderful. Now, I was asked specifically to talk about GPs and commissioning reform. And I thought about that word, not GP or commissioning, but the word reform. And it's not sure I would have used that word, because if reform is what we call what this whole-scale destruction of our NHS is, I'm not sure it's the right word. And this destruction that is moving our publicly owned assets into the hands of the profit sector. During the debate, during the health and social care debate, the Royal College of Midwives were critical of the changes, and like the RCGP, felt that this was one reorganisation too far and voiced their concerns. Or as David Nicholson said, the changes were so large you could see them from outer space. Cathy Warwick was brave enough very early on to stand up and say publicly that the bill was a massive and expensive distraction from the challenges facing the NHS as it tried to move forward and to improve the health service against a background of enormous financial restraint. And if there's one thing I'd have liked to say to Louisa, one thing, if we stood still long enough, we would form those trusting relationships between colleagues so that we can trust each other and we can understand and not dismiss the concerns, as we heard earlier, of the brave midwife who was trying to blow the whistle and raise concerns. Like our college, yours supported the aspirations of clinically led commissioning. And of course, it makes sense to give clinicians the say in how services should be run and in planning services for their local community. And it makes sense to give that role to GPs. We see 1 million patients per day. 85% of all NHS contacts come through us. A child can reach adulthood having never seen a paediatrician. A patient with serious mental illness may never see a psychiatrist. So, of course, it makes sense. And if we did, and if we do have, as the headlines today say, if we are liberated in order to do this, maybe we can sort out some of those wicked issues that we've been hearing about today. How to commission services, for example, around the needs of the child, how to address the fragmentation of our services, how to put back continuity of care, which is what our patients want. So it does make sense. Your college and our college welcomed greater engagement of service users in their care, and we welcomed the opportunity to have more integrated services. But patient involvement and integration, both of these and GP commissioning, could have all been achieved without this massive and expensive disruption. The bill, with the mantra of competition and liberation driving improvements, cannot possibly achieve the aims of giving power to GPs, of offering more choice to patients, and of reducing costs to the state. And let's just look at these. Choice. Funny enough, when I was thinking about this, in my experience of 30 years as a doctor, the only place patients repeatedly, or people repeatedly ask for choice, is in midwifery. It's the only time where the choice of where they have their birth, they might be influenced by a service that has a good neonatal unit, or a water birth, or being allowed to have home births. And actually, as a GP, it gives me great pleasure to discuss the choices that patients, that women, make at that stage. But other than that, it's very rare for patients to want anything more than a good local provider. The health bill focuses not just on choice, but on competition. And it's now an established wisdom in healthcare policy that choice is indisputably a good thing, like buying a car. The logical consequence of this view is that high-quality therapeutic relationship is one that amounts to giving autonomous choice to the patient, but not necessarily. The philosopher Anne-Marie Moll has written a seminal book called The Logic of Care, and it's based on her observation between predominantly the patient and the nurse and encounters in diabetes. And she argues that good care has little to do with patient choice, and actually creating more opportunities for choice doesn't improve care. She argues that choice is secondary to the core business of clinical care rather than its essence, and especially in the relation to chronic illness. And Moll talks about the art of caring. And what she means by this is that good care is not something that comes from making well-argued individual choices, but something that grows out of a collaborative and continuing attempts to attune knowledge and technologies to diseased bodies and complex lives. The American philosopher Barry Schwartz talks about the disbenefits of choice and that they may outweigh their benefits. He said, "Too much choice can be a bad thing. It can have two negative effects. The first, it can produce paralysis rather than liberation, because with so many options to choose from, people often find it difficult to choose at all. And the second is, even if we overcome that paralysis to make a choice, we end up less satisfied than if we had fewer options in the first place." Schwartz says, "The tyranny of life is choice, whether it's 176 different salad dressings or 40 different brands of toothpaste for sale in the average supermarket. Choice in the health service creates waste and costs money and is inefficient. And choice and competition, as I said, go together." One of the concerns we had during the health and social care debate was that it would raise costs, and in particular, transaction costs. And this is one of the things that is very important that we watch for, because commissioning will raise costs. The market will also raise costs, as I said, with the transaction. But what about GPs? We have been given this wonderful once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, they say. I worry, a little bit like yourselves, and just picking up a little of the discussion, that what we're losing is probably more than we're gaining. We're losing the ability to provide for our patients what they want. We're losing the ability to provide continuity of care, which for most patients is the most important aspect of their relationship between their carer and their clinician and themselves. So, over the last year, I've learnt a lot. I've learnt a tremendous amount. I've learnt a lot about the health service, but more than that, I've learnt what really matters to patients. And what really matters to patients, and I know you had a discussion about this earlier, and it seems so simple, but what matters to patients is kindness, compassion, and caring. Let me just give you a little bit of a background. I'm a doctor because I watched my father, who was a single-handed GP, at work. He worked very hard, and he inspired me, and he inspired me to be a doctor. And he said to me many times that to be a good doctor, to be a good GP, you had to be kind. But he also said you had to give something back to your local community. And he also told me that medicine was as much a science as it is an art. In fact, he told me it was more than an art. Watching him and thinking now, it's easy to forget that medicine's an art as well as a science. Sound clinical judgments, the results of personal relationships as well as scientific knowledge. That midwife that kept going in went, not because of what the textbooks told her, but because she felt that something wasn't right. Sound clinical feeling. But nowadays, every encounter we have with our patient is turning into one that's about measuring. About measuring anything that moves. I've created the 11th commandment. If it moves, it therefore shalt be measured. And learning to strike the right balance between the science and the art of medicine isn't easy. We're being measured with an inch of our lives. A woman of my age, for example, should routinely have her weight, height, blood sugar, blood density, blood sugar, cholesterol, kidney function, mood state, and bone density all measured every 15 months. Can you believe it? And if you're a boy and you've got diabetes, a man, you now have to be asked about erectile dysfunction every 15 months. Can you imagine the invasion of asking your patient about their erectile dysfunction? This measurement is distorting our relationship with our patients. It's standardizing care, minimizing risk, yes, but it's shifting the balance too far. In our drive to improve the length and quality of life, we mustn't lose sight of the relationship between the clinician and their patient, a precious relationship which is at the beating heart of healthcare. We must strike a balance between the science and the art of our caring. We must make sure it isn't weighted too much in the direction of the numbers game. We've made great strides in the biomedical aspects of patient care, but we mustn't forget our roots as carers and healers. My worry is that policymakers' emphasis on regulation and monitoring risks making the conditions that are hostile to the cultivation of compassion. So perhaps it's time for all of us to refocus on the immeasurable, for you as midwives who have such an important role at the start of all of our lives, but all of us, to refocus on what matters to our patients, on trust, on caring, on respect, and on kindness. Kindness to our patients, but fundamentally, and I think importantly, kindness to each other and to ourselves as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.